Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
I'm Sean Kane, and this is Catholic Baltimore. Many Baltimoreans are familiar with the Italian festivals that occur every spring in and around the city, and especially in Baltimore's Little Italy. They're throwbacks to the old ethnic festivals of the 50s and 60s. As in those days, the neighborhood Catholic Church is at the center of those gatherings and the beneficiary of the support generated by them. We are joined now by the pastor of St. Leo's Catholic Church in Baltimore's Little Italy, Father Sal Frenari. Father Sal, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Sean. Thank you for the invitation.
Sure. So how long have you been pastor of St. Leo's?
About 4 years.
Great. And how long has your sponsoring religious community, the Palatine Fathers, been at the parish?
A little over 100 years.
My, so that's quite a commitment to the parish and to that neighborhood.
Yes.
What makes St. Leo such a unique parish?
A number of things. It's the official Italian parish in this historic archdiocese under the beautiful leadership of Archbishop Laurie. We're steeped in tradition. We have daily rosary after all our masses. Novenas. I celebrate the Latin Tridentine Mass 4 times a year. We have Eucharistic adoration every week, and it's been named a historic landmark by the United States Department of the Interior. And also our community reaches out to parishioners beyond the boundaries of Little Italy, to hospitals, nursing homes, and hospices. So it really speaks volumes of the beauty of our Catholic faith.
It's as much immersed in a community as any parish I can think of, in a very unique way. And I think it's a testament to the importance of the church that so many people who come to Mass on the weekends or are involved in the parish no longer even live in the community, but grew up there or their grandparents grew up there.
Mm-hmm.
To what do you attribute that?
Well, it's basically because St. Leo's is primarily the Italian parish of the Archdiocese of Baltimore. Many Italian immigrants settled there, and I think it's a beautiful, harmonious union between the Italian community who live there and the Palatine Fathers who serve at St. Leo's, because our community was established by St. Vincent Pallotti, who was born in Rome, and many of our members do have an Italian background, so I think it's a beautiful, harmonious union.
Is the Palatines, are all of their parishes that they sponsor the Italian parishes for those dioceses, or are they?
Not all. As a matter of fact, at this point in time, the Immaculate Conception province only staffs St. Leo's as uniquely an Italian parish.
Okay. So even though the community itself has deep ties to Italian Catholicism, they're, you know.
St. Leo's is actually at this point the only church that's uniquely Italian, although there are many Italian Americans that comprise the congregations of other churches, but St. Leo's is pretty unique.
So as I mentioned in my introduction, that St. Leo's is best known in the area for its wonderful festivals and its regular fundraisers like the ravioli dinners. One of the festivals is coming up this August. Can you tell us a little bit about the St. Gabriel's Festival?
St. Gabriel Society was established back in 1922, and it really centers around fundraising for not only the society, but for St. Leo's in particular. But it also gives the community an opportunity for fellowship, to bring new friends and old friends. And it's uniquely both Catholic, because we invite non-Catholics and even non-Italians to come to Little Italy to enjoy this celebration. And it's also uniquely Italian because it takes place in an Italian community. So it's both Catholic and universal, bringing non-Catholics and non-Italians into the community, and also the fact that it takes place in an Italian area.
Anybody who's been to these festivals or maybe has organized one themselves knows that they take an awful lot of work, which means that there are an awful lot of volunteers and people connected to it. How important are the volunteers who assist St. Leo's with these events?
Sean, volunteers are the backbone of all our events. In fact, if it wasn't for the whole concept of volunteerism in the parish, we probably wouldn't be able to hold any of them because our staff just simply couldn't do it. And, mm-hmm. Our religious community couldn't do it because of the lack of numbers. So volunteers are absolutely essential to keep the fundraisers and the festivals going.
How early do you have to begin working on it? Literally, is it like year-round or is it six months out? Or
We can begin as early as a year in advance mm-hmm. in preparation. For St. Gabriel, because it involves three entities, St. Leo the Great Church, the St. Gabriel Society, and the Little Italy Lodge, we usually begin as early as a year in advance to have all these entities unite to pull it off.
Yeah, that's amazing. And St. Anthony's Festival this year, you were saying, was a big success,
and we're very happy about it. Not only because it helps us financially, but because it does bring a beautiful fellowship of not only the Little Italy community but the surrounding communities.
Mm-hmm. And how the neighborhood itself, it's changed, but it hasn't changed. So I know you've only been there a few years. What have you heard about the community itself and maybe some of the changes over the decades and the years?
Well, it was primarily an Italian community, but interestingly enough, before that, in the turn of the century, it was mostly German and some Polish, and then the Irish community came in. But now it's mostly Italian, but the demographics have changed. So I would say at this point in time, it's beginning to become mixed.
Mm-hmm. And younger families in the area?
Actually, yes. We bring a lot of younger families into the community by way of both marriage and baptism.
Great. So in addition to the festivals, I know the parish has a former school building, which you continue to use to educate and teaches everything from Italian lessons to cooking. Can you talk a little bit about this and what's offered there and how people can take advantage of it?
Yeah, when we lost our primary school, the St. Leo the Great Primary School, which was staffed by the School Sisters of Notre Dame in the 1980s, it was developed by former pastor Father Oreste Pandola as a learning center. And it's now under the brilliant leadership of Mrs. Rosalie Ranieri, who has a vast years of experience as a teacher and also a principal in the Baltimore public school system. And I think the educational center is unique because it actually puts fun back into learning. And we not only just have Italian language classes on many different levels, including an advanced level, but we also have cooking lessons and painting classes, and we also have a class on making palms that come in on Palm Sunday into crosses. There are photography courses. There's a history course on our Judeo-Christian heritage and also some computer classes.
That's fantastic. And they're open to anyone?
Yes, they're open to anyone.
So St. Leo's is nonetheless an urban parish. It's located in the heart of the city. And like all city parishes, faces some challenges, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You want to speak a little bit about what those challenges are?
Well, the problem, if you want to look at it that way, but I look at it more as a challenge, is it is an inner city parish. We did lose our primary school in the 1980s. And many families now move to the county because of the vast choices of schools there, less crime, less taxes and better parking and so on. But the challenge is bringing people back into the city. And I think we can do that because I've established recently a liturgy evangelization committee. And many of the young adults and the youth in our parish are involved in that committee. But not only that, they also help us in so many different ways. For example, we work with the youth through our Bible study program, which takes place during the 9:30 Mass every Sunday. There's a summer school and a summer camp that takes place every year, which is is funded actually in many ways through the Archdiocese, through the League of the Little Flower. Mm. And so through those means, and we also have an interesting group that I helped found about 7 or 8 years ago called Hands and Hearts, which is comprised of young people and also young adults. And their function is multi. For example, they have an outreach program to the poor where they prepare and distribute food to the different homeless shelters in the area, including the Baltimore Rescue Mission and the Paris Caris House for Women. And I think it's beautiful. And they also have a fundraiser called Wine Tasting Night, which is also an opportunity for fellowship. But it's also a way for them to bring in money to continue the outreach program to the homeless and the poor. So the youth is involved in many of those aspects at St. Leo's. Mm.
And so it sounds like as important as the Italian heritage is to the parish, so too is its urban roots.
Yes.
And it really embraces both.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Sean, because the Italian roots and the urban roots, to be quite honest, are pretty much the same, because not that many Italians moved out of the community. Most of the parishioners that moved out of Little Italy did not have an Italian-American background, but we're hoping to bring some of them back, and many of them have come back.
Yeah.
Many of them tried living in the county and felt that it was not really what they were looking for, and some of them have returned, so I'm very happy about that.
The pavement wasn't greener, right?
Yeah.
So if people want to learn more about St. Leo's Parish, what's the best way for them to do that?
Probably our website, Sean, and the website is www.stleosrcc.com, and Saint is spelled out.
Spelled out. Very good. Father Sal Fornari from St. Leo's Catholic Church, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Sean.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
The season of sacraments is nearly here. First Holy Communion, Confirmation, and Weddings. Visit the Baltimore Basilica, America's first cathedral, and stop by the gift shop for all of your gift needs. From beautiful frames to crucifixes and crosses, statues and one-of-a-kind rosaries, the Basilica Gift Shop has it all. Friendly, knowledgeable staff members can help you select the perfect gift. Also available, Baltimore's very own Mouth Party Caramels, locally designed hand-painted signs and jewelry, plus gifts for Easter, as well as an extensive line of St. Patrick's Day items, sure to bring out the Irish in everyone. Visit the Basilica Gift Shop at 409 Cathedral Street in Baltimore or call 410-727-3565 for hours and directions. Free street parking available directly in front of the Basilica between 9:30 and 4 p.m.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. Deacon Michael Yakir, Chancellor of the Archdiocese for the Military Services, USA, and a Vietnam veteran, understands the effects of the military's current shortage of Catholic chaplains. His son, who is in the Army, has been deployed twice, and on one of those deployments, he got to see a priest no more than once every 6 weeks. He missed out on the Eucharist, Deacon Yakir said. He missed out on Mass, he missed out on confession, and he missed out on any kind of counseling. Currently, 1/4 of the military is Catholic, but only 8% of the chaplain corps is Catholic. Visit CatholicReview.org to read more about how the Archdiocese for the Military Services is coping with the shortage and how it hopes to fix it. In local news, Baltimore Archbishop William E. Laurie was in the Midwest last weekend for his 8th grade reunion. Check CatholicReview.org or our print edition to get the scoop on the Archbishop's visit to New Albany, Indiana, in which he and about half of the 8th grade class of 1965 from Our Lady of Perpetual Help School reminisced about the old times. Some things you might not know about the Archbishop. His neighborhood was grateful when he gave up the violin, and in 2nd grade, he received a poor mark in religion class. Want to stay up to date with these stories and many others from the Catholic Review? Sign up for our e-newsletter and get our best stories delivered straight to your inbox twice a week. Text CRNews to 22828 or email info@catholicreview.org to sign up. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Eric Zygmunt.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only newspaper in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, the Catholic Review. The print newspaper can be delivered to your home every other Thursday, and you can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at CatholicReview.org. Again, online, that's CatholicReview.org.
Catholic Baltimore takes a look at the men who have led the Premier See of Baltimore since its inception in 1789. With the help of Father Michael Roach, church historian and professor of church history at Mount St. Mary Seminary, we are offered a glimpse into the challenges and achievements, the education and background, and the leadership qualities of those men who have served as Archbishop of Baltimore. This is Sean Cain, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We're here with Father Michael Roach. Father Roach, thanks for being with us.
Delighted to be here.
We're talking about Archbishop Marischal, the third Archbishop of Baltimore. He succeeded the short-lived but effective Archbishop Leonard Neal. And we understand that Archbishop Marischal was a Frenchman, but not a stranger to Baltimore.
Not at all. He'd come here early on, then returned to France to teach, and then came back again. It's a great legacy to the Archdiocese in many, many different ways. So much of the old cathedral downtown, things that were gifts of his students from France and Marseille, where he had taught. His libraries still at St. Mary's, a marvelous library. He was a learned man, quite the scholar. Perhaps a surprising appointment.
Right. And it's said that Bishop DeChervis of Boston might have been Archbishop Neal's choice to succeed him. Do we know much about Bishop DeChervis?
Chevreuse was not about to leave Boston. He loved Boston, so I'm sure he wouldn't have accepted the invitation to come to Baltimore. He loved the English. He had fled to England during the French Revolution, and because of the welcome the English people gave him, he always had a great love for the English, and that's probably why he did so very well in Boston. He was almost a legend in Boston. He would have been grand in Baltimore, but I don't think he wanted to come.
The Sulpician ties of Archbishop Marischal, were they? Do you see that as having played some role in his coming here?
Absolutely, absolutely. As I say, Archbishop Neal and Carroll thought very highly of the Sulpicians and the seminary that they had were conducting in Packer Street. Sadly, there were not enough students. There were at times more professors than there were students. So we had the Sulpicians going out and doing mission work. I think that Ambrose Marischal had been over in the Eastern Shore at Cordova and at St. Peter's, is it, right there in Queenstown on Route 50. In fact, I think that the communion rail there, he had carved himself because there wasn't a lot to do. But he was such a scholar, they eventually did call him back to Baltimore to teach.
And what was he, what were his primary, the focus of his scholarly work when he, before he came, became a bishop?
Right. He was quite the theologian, very orthodox, as a matter of fact. Some would denounce him as being too ancien régime, but he really wasn't. He was just a very scrupulous scholar, I think.
And he, like his predecessors, had ties to Georgetown. What were those?
Right. He was interested in St. Mary's surviving in the same world as Georgetown. For a small Catholic community to support two institutions of higher learning was quite a challenge, and he certainly pushed St. Mary's advantage over Georgetown's. He did serve. Everybody went through Georgetown for a while. They had presidents practically every other year. There were no long tenures in those days, so Marischal had time there too.
Now, it's reported that Marischal was believed to be the first to provide Rome with a comprehensive report on the status of the church in the United States. And among the things that he reported was were schisms that were provoked by what he called rebellious trustees. What do we know about these trustees and what kinds of problems might they have been causing?
They most particularly weren't going to take to a French bishop. A lot of the problems of the trustees were ethnic problems. The Irish particularly didn't want anyone giving out to them in this new country where they knew independence for the first time, and they were pretty reluctant to knuckle under to any bishop, most especially a French bishop.
Mm. And it's said that his relationship with the Jesuits weren't quite as favorable as the previous two archbishops who themselves were members of the society. Do we know how that relationship might have been different and how that might have impacted the diocese, and just in terms of how he interacted with the Jesuits?
Oh, yes. There were great fights with the Jesuits and Ambrose Marischal, as a matter of fact. Some real battles royal over land and over their autonomy of their parishes and over the funds, some of the funds that they had accrued while administering the diocese before there were bishops.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a good relationship at all. No, not favorable.
Now, it's said that he may have been what we refer to today as the first ad limita visit to Rome. And do we know anything about that visit? It would have been unusual at the time. It's said that at some point it was established that the Archbishop of Baltimore would be the official spokesperson for the Roman Catholic Church in the United States. What had been the case up until then, and again, how did Rome view the church at this time?
Well, in Marischal's time, it was still the only archbishop in the country, the only metropolitan archdiocese in the country, and everything was subject to Baltimore, so it would be logical that the Archbishop of Baltimore would be the contact man with the Holy See.
And while the archbishop seemed to have a good working relationship with Rome, he wasn't quite as fortunate in dealing with the church in England. Do we know what that might have led to? No. And finally, what else? What about Archbishop Ambrose's legacy should be remembered in terms of his service as the third Archbishop of Baltimore?
Well, he had a good long tenure, and he brought stability to the diocese after the short reign of Leonard Neale. He was something of a battler. Some of the new suffragan bishops didn't appreciate him. They thought he was too old-fashioned and too hearkening back to pre-revolutionary France. And he wasn't afraid to take them on. He resisted them. John England, particularly down in Charleston, wanted to take him on. But Ambrose Marischal was above the fray. He was a great man. There's no question about it. A scholar, a leader, very orthodox, loyal to Rome. His years were good for Baltimore. Remember, these were great times for Baltimore. In this era, Baltimore was the third largest city in the country. So it was important economically as well as religiously for the Catholics. But I think Marischal was one of the great archbishops, often overlooked and underrated.
That's the third Archbishop of Baltimore, Ambrose Marischal, successor to Leonard Neale and to the first Bishop of Baltimore, John Carroll.
Are you interested in joining the Archdiocese of Baltimore and Catholic Review Media on a bus pilgrimage to the Papal Mass in Philadelphia, September 27th? Pope Francis is expected to celebrate an outdoor mass along Philadelphia's famed Benjamin Franklin Parkway. It will be a huge crowd and a great way to celebrate our faith together with hundreds of thousands of fellow Catholics, even if the Pope is just a tiny dot from your vantage point, or you can only see him on a video screen, you will want to join what will probably be the largest gathering of Catholics in the USA this year. For more information about the September 27th pilgrimage to the Papal Mass, visit tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus. That's tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus or call 443-524-3150. 443-524-3150. See you in Philly.
For 143 years, New Cathedral Cemetery has served the needs of the Catholic community of Baltimore and Central Maryland. New Cathedral is the only cemetery owned by the Archdiocese of Baltimore and is the final resting place for many religious orders and famous citizens. 125 acres of rolling hills, trees, and beautiful monuments, the cemetery is an oasis of peace and tranquility and is located off Edmondson Avenue just outside of Catonsville. New Cathedral is dedicated to the task of tending to the mortal remains of our dearly departed and has many more years of available space. If you are in need of a burial site, vault, monument, or marker, or just a respectful location to place your cremated loved ones, our counselors will help you through this process and make sure the wishes of you and your loved ones are honored. Visit us online at newcathedralcemetery.org, like us on Facebook at New Cathedral Cemetery Bonnie Bray, or call 410-566-7770.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.